When the historian's ideological bias distorts or ignores evidence from the past, a bad kind of revisionism emerges.
Dr. Mark Kaltoff of Hillsdale College, talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
It masquerades as honest history. Such revisionism needs to be exposed and dismantled. It undermines proper understanding of our world. It has been said those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. In this case, failure to expose bad revisionism means that those who do not know the past are condemned to suffer at the hands of biased ideologues who claim they do.
You can meet and hear Dr. Mark Kaltoff making the case against revisionist history at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. A lot of speculation taking place with the upcoming midterm elections. We are obviously in a volatile time. Midterms are a volatile time, but generally a volatile time politically in the United States. No doubt about it. Very few people are sitting on the fence, so to speak. There's a Religion News Service piece that came out several days ago, Why Religion Won't Help the Republicans in the midterms. I think it's usually assumed in kind of a very ham-fisted way that religion works in favor of the Republicans. We're going to respond to this piece. Henry Olson joins us. He's senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and author of the books The Working Class Republican and The Four Faces of the Republican Party. Henry, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me on.
Do you agree with the premise of the Religion News Service piece, Why Religion Won't Help the Republicans in the Midterms?
No, I don't. Republicans will continue to be helped by the high enthusiasm and turnout of the religiously devout. And the article doesn't analyze the geographic distribution of these voters very well, that while non-religious and non-observant people are growing as a share of the American population, they tend to be already living in highly Democratic areas, so they may be growing as a share, but it's simply adding to Democrats' wasted votes in places they already win.
So, in other words, where voters live is as significant as other factors, such as what they believe, and perhaps, as pointed out in the Religion News Service piece, how observant they are in their religious beliefs.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Republicans don't get all the bang for their buck from evangelical Protestant support, in part because it's highly concentrated in certain southern and midwestern states. But it's more evenly distributed than the non-religious or the non-Christian vote, which is heavily concentrated in blue areas. And then you get the question of the white observant Catholic vote that tends to be very well distributed throughout the Midwest, which helps them in a number of governor's races and a number of House races. Even though the aggregate number nationally may not be as large as other groups.
That also would appear to kind of mix into those urban areas that are generally bastions of Democratic votes.
Yes, the urban areas tend to be places, even in southern states, of higher non-traditional religious beliefs or higher degrees of non-belief. But again, there are some areas that Republicans hold right now that will be negatively impacted by this. But by and large, religion is going to be a positive again for Republicans because religious voters will show up, they like what the president is doing, and they tend to be strategically distributed throughout the country, whereas Democratic non-religious voters, or the religious left, as the article talks about, is largely concentrated in highly Democratic areas.
How would you describe that last category, the religious left, in terms of their voting?
The religious left gets a lot of news, but it's not terribly politically important. It is people of orthodox center-left or progressive views who attend church. They tend to attend services of some sort. They will tend to be people in places of wealthy metropolitan areas, and these areas have been shifting to the Democrats for well over 25 years, and Democrats hold most of the places where the religious left already is some sort of politically strong.
The focus is usually on evangelicals broadly defined and Roman Catholics broadly defined, but do both of those categories need to be further understood in terms of that level of observance that can be measured?
Absolutely. The public polls tend not to get very deeply into conviction or orthodoxy or observance, but the data that we do have suggests that the more orthodox one's religious belief, and this includes Orthodox Jews, as the article notes, as well as Orthodox Catholics and Orthodox Protestants, they tend to be more likely to both vote for social conservatives in Republican primaries, and they tend to be more likely to vote for Republicans. People who identify as evangelical but don't attend church very much actually were very strong Trump supporters in the primary, but were as strong as religious conservatives in the general. And the same is true of lapsed Catholics, that they tended to be Trump supporters over Cruz supporters in the primary, but came home, they continued to vote for Trump in the general election, whereas they may not have always voted for a Republican.
One of the things noted in the Religion News Service piece is that in terms of just ticking the boxes of his base, President Trump has racked up a considerable number of accomplishments that perhaps has shored up his base. How is that likely to affect the midterms?
The religious base is highly motivated to keep Republicans and the president in charge. There are a number of seats in a number of states where that's going to be very important. They could very well be the difference in a number of states, particularly places like Indiana, where a high religious engagement is crucial to defeating Joe Donnelly for the Republican Party. I expect that the confirmation hearings for Judge and perhaps Justice Kavanaugh will energize both sides of the social culture wars, that the progressive left will be angry at what's happening and the evangelical and observant Catholic right will be happy at what's happening. Again, that will have more benefit for the Republicans because of where the Christian social right is located. They tend to be in seats or states that are more marginal than the progressive cultural left.
The conventional wisdom that we often hear is that a first-term president will tend to have a bad first midterm election, that his party will tend to lose seats. That seems a pretty simplistic analysis. How would you correct that conventional wisdom?
Well, and it's correct as far as it goes, which is to say that with very few exceptions, presidents lose seats in the midterm following their election. The question is how many seats? Usually, the president in the first midterm will lose only a few seats, which is to say that they might lose control, as Dwight Eisenhower's Republican Party did in the 1954 midterms, because they had only a narrow control. But generally, it's a minor correction, but not a major correction. The major corrections happen when there is extreme disapproval with what's going on, such as 1966, 1994, 2010. And the Democrats are arguing that this election will look more like those years than like a normal midterm where Republicans would be expected to lose some, but not a bundle of seats.
How would you evaluate that? Would you tend to agree with that analysis?
If the election were held today, the Republicans, I think, would lose control of the House, but very narrowly. So that would mean that they would have a greater than normal House loss, but it would not be the blue wave that Democrats are talking about. Because the Senate map is unusually favorable to Republicans, they could actually gain a seat or two, even as they were doing poorly in other races. In that sense, it would look much like Ronald Reagan's 1982 midterm, where Republicans lost 26 seats out of 192 in the House, but picked up a seat or two in the Senate. And that was at the depth of Ronald Reagan's unpopularity because of the very deep recession.
The economy is doing beautifully by all measures, and I wonder whether or not that might override all other considerations when we have an economy that seems to be chugging along, and then we have virtual full employment in the United States.
That is the Republican hope. I don't believe that's going to happen. I don't believe that's going to happen because of the extreme passions that President Trump's personality and some of his policies provokes among a large number of Americans. For that to be true, what you would basically say is that somebody who strongly disapproves of Trump but likes the economy will suppress their feelings about Trump and vote for the party that delivered the economy. All of the data that I'm seeing shows that that's not likely to happen, largely because of the unprecedented nature of the anger among, not a majority, but a very large minority of Americans towards the president and his behavior.
Yeah, the other factor there, I think, that is, and it's less tangible, but while people disapproved of Ronald Reagan in that first midterm because of an economy that was just by today's standards, just terrible. Ronald Reagan didn't take to social media, which didn't exist at the time, and antagonize his critics and the press on a hourly basis. How is that going to affect things?
That's one of the big problems for President Trump, is that Twitter could be something that would be a huge benefit to him, that Franklin Roosevelt created what we now know as the fireside chat, his radio addresses to the nation, because the print media at the time were hostile to him. They were owned by wealthy Republicans. So he bypassed the gatekeepers and talked directly to the people. Twitter could be that for Donald Trump, but the message he's using on Twitter angers as many people as it attracts. And that means that Twitter is one of the biggest problems that Trump has, because it's not helping him put together a durable majority. It's only energizing the minority that strongly supports him.
On the Democratic side, do you expect the trend, which appears to be kind of trying the Bernie Sanders tactic one more time, going a little more left to see if we can balance things out, do you expect that to hold in the midterm?
The Democrats are trying to have their cake and eat it, too. They are presenting a more moderate face in more moderate areas, and they are moving to the left on a national basis, but the people who are espousing those views aren't usually up for election in the swing districts or states. I think the left-wing swing, if it continues, will come back to bite them in 2020, because typically midterms are a referendum and presidential elections are a choice. So in the referendum, people are saying, do I like the direction that the president is leading us in? Yes, no. The presidential election, they say, do I like the direction that the other party wants to lead me in? So thus you have the situation where in 1994, massive Republican victory is followed by the reelection of President Clinton, and the same in 2010 with President Obama, that people didn't like the direction that Clinton and Obama were leading, but they didn't like the alternative Republicans were putting up. So for this midterm, I don't think it will help them, except in rare cases where a Democratic candidate missteps. But I think it would be very dangerous for them to continue in that course in 2020 if they seek to unseat the president.
If I recall that tactic of going moderate in more moderate areas and going left in more left areas was pretty much the tactic that was used by candidate Hillary Clinton when running for president, and it didn't turn out so well for her.
Well, you can't do it for a presidential election because there's national media. So if you go to Detroit and say one thing and you go to Berkeley and say another and then you go to the coal mountains of West Virginia and say a third thing, the people in West Virginia know what you said in Detroit and Berkeley. In these races where Democrats are challenging Republicans, they tend not to have voting records where Republicans can point out and say, see, they really vote with the left. And so they're able to tailor their message in the first go so that people only see what they're being told. And then we'll see whether or not they have the courage to buck their party when they're actually elected. So it's a little bit different from Clinton because of the nature of who the candidate is and the nature of the race in each place.
Finally, then, why is religion going to matter in the upcoming midterms?
It's going to matter because it matters to people. Anything that matters to people. And again, religion doesn't necessarily mean theology, but it means the public views that stem from that. You know, that's religiously orthodox people have certain views about public policy, and non-believers have certain views about public policy that flow from those beliefs. It'll matter because it matters to people. And anything that matters to a large number of people ultimately matters in American elections. And given where religiously orthodox people live, and given where religiously unorthodox or religious non-believers live, on balance, religious enthusiasm will help the Republicans in this election.
Henry Olson is senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. He's author of the books The Working Class Republican and The Four Faces of the Republican Party. You can learn more about these books and the Ethics and Public Policy Center at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Henry, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks to Wittenberg Academy, an online classical Lutheran school. Childcare for the fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference is absolutely free. You can meet and hear Chris Roseborough, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Mark Kaltoff, Beverly Yonke, and Anthony Esselin. Attendance is limited to 400. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385 weekdays during regular business hours. 618-223-8385. The Fall 2018 Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll get a review of the movie Mission Impossible Fallout. It is getting tremendous reviews every place. They're saying it's one of the best action films ever made. Pastor Ted Geese will join us. We'll see if he concurs. We'll discuss a Christian response to panhandlers. Should we view them as people in need or simply someone there trying to hustle us for a little extra money? Pastor Steve Shave will answer some of those questions tomorrow. And we'll get a biography on 3rd century martyr Lawrence from Pastor Will Whedon. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.